This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
It's not actually red. It turns red when you press it. Right. Ready?
Always.
Ready.
Just say something, just to see how something. It records.
Tonev, yeah. I love Tonev.
How's your levels?
Right then, let's go.
Could we use the word embarrassing? I don't want to say sorry, because we got away with it against Yeovil a couple of weeks ago. All you can say was we got what we deserved, which was nothing. What we deserved, the way we played, the way we went about it, the way we tried to play, was just was chalk and cheese from what we witnessed on Saturday and the midweek before that. But look, I take the responsibility of it. I've changed the whole team because of the ones who have been knocking on my door where there was their opportunity. And it's fair to say they haven't grasped it, that's for sure. We were absolutely hopeless. And we have to take that on the chin and accept the consequences and be big enough and brave enough to admit that we were just nowhere near the mark which is required. Listen, I can't stand here and defend them. It's difficult to come out and face all of you because I am flabbergasted at what I've just watched.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com, and joining me on Aston Villa's only naturist podcast are the naked forms of Chris Budd and Dan Rogers from the villaunderground.com. It's a three-way action podcast.
Oi,
welcome.
Oi.
Hello, my Villa chums.
Dan Rogers back in the Villa universe, or the Villaverse, as you labelled it, and I use that almost in every article I write.
What a legacy.
The royalty check is en route, I assume.
Yeah. Just before we get into the show, just very briefly, how are you viewing the current standing in the Villaverse, this unbeaten start in the league? Are you feeling half full, half empty, Chris?
I'm content. Good start. I'll take it. Picking up points, accumulating. We're in and amongst it, as Bruce likes to say, every 5 minutes.
I assured people on, I think it was Instagram, that I expect Villa to remain in top six until the end of the season.
Yeah, I'll go along with that.
Yeah.
I mean, in reality, we won't be at Christmas, but if we go seventh, though, it's going to be a dark day.
So, Dan, how are you feeling?
I'm positive. I think given where we were at when, you know, in the middle of the summer, you'd open your phone and you go, oh, we're going into administration. What? And then And then we can't make any signings, and then we don't have any money, and then we have an absent owner with the best Twitter PR in the world, who some people still worship.
Yeah, exactly. Some people still don't believe we were going into administration, and they just say, oh, it's James Nursery said that, and that means it doesn't happen. You know, it's all a load of bollocks. It's paper talk. And he saved us. He saved us.
No, he was desperate, and to be honest, we'll come to him later, I'm sure. But the fact that we've got two guys in who are, I mean, the one guy's ridiculously wealthy, the other guy is very wealthy too. But it put us at a huge disadvantage. And I think that though Bruce's team selections and approach have not been universally well received, I think we'll perhaps say, we're in pretty good shape so far this season. But I don't think it's any surprising that we've got signings coming in now, because we need, as we'll talk about, the Brentford and Ipswich games, we were lacking in errors.
Voice from the future. This podcast was actually recorded before the 1-1 draw against Reading at Villa Park, but it's there in spirit. I mean, it's the same kind of vibe. We played pretty well in the first hour or so, as we did against Brentford. It's just the late equaliser was the other way round.
Should be dealt with by James Chester. Oh, it's a penalty. The Villa players can't believe it. But Reading have a chance in stoppage time to salvage a point in the 93rd minute. Chester, it's a clumsy challenge. He should have done a lot better with it. Gives his whistle. Bullock steps up and blasts it down the middle. And Reading have surely salvaged a share of the points at Villa Park.
I thought the point was actually going to drop us down the league, but we actually went up to fourth. So the sentiments of the podcast still stand, but it's just three draws on the trot. Throw in a little bit of getting knocked out of the League Cup by Burton, and it's suddenly four winless games. I think we're still feeling the same as we did after the Brentford game, because the problems that Villa have are pretty much the same old problems. Anyway, back to the show. The bottom line is, you don't win every game in a season.
Absolutely.
I mean, as the old adage goes, you don't start looking at the league table really until about 10 games. So we'll see what happens there. Anyway, let's have a quick 3 points to kick off the show. A show that I think we'll do in two parts. We'll do the normal show, and then, just because to get the first bit out quicker, we'll do a second part, which will be the listener questions. And there's bloody loads of them through on Instagram. So we'll do that as a separate show. Anyway, 3 points. First one, the away season ticket scheme, which a lot of people have been moaning about for good reason, because it wasn't really explained to people. I went to an away consultation group and actually confronted the head of ticketing, Lino Reardon, regarding the fact that I didn't think the club realised that most fans who have got into this scheme seem to think that they pay £40 and then they can just pick and choose what they want. So obviously pick, you know, the local derbies, Baggies, Blues, and then, you know, sod the rest, while other fans are saying, well, I've been to 15 away games last year, so why am I suddenly behind them in the pecking order? And it's quite funny, because I don't think she really realises on the ground level, that's what a lot of people think. And in fact, there's some staff members who also think that. And she said, oh, well, in Clause 7, it says you need to have a certain percentage of games before you can attend the Baggies game. What's that percentage? I don't know, maybe like 75%. So it just sounds like it's all a bit wishy-washy. So I asked her basically to write to all the members of the scheme to actually explain exactly what it is and spell it out, just to kind of nip the problems in the bud. But, you know, you have these fan consultation groups, and obviously this was something that was released without any consultation with this group. So that's what you get. Point number two, I don't know if anybody out there, I think I tweeted some sections of it, but it was kind of a contrast to Dr. Tony's approach to running Villa. Was Jeff Shies, the Wolves CEO, in the, I think it's Football Business magazine. I just read this interview and it just sprung out off the pages like just A to Z common sense. And when you read it, you realise it's pretty much opposite to everything that Aston Villa did. Again, this is Chinese owners of Wolves. He was essentially saying that when they took over, they were told that you need a team of elite British players to win promotion. And, you know, you need tough players, blah, 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 experience. These are the things that Steve Bruce and, you know, Wynas and Steve Round were all saying. And then Jeff Shai said, well, obviously, you know, we tried that the first season, it didn't work. But the problem is you have 24 teams all chasing the same type of players. So they just went abroad to, you know, Europe, South America, and decided if you play better football, it doesn't matter where these players are from. And better football, as it, to quote him, usually means that you're more fast, physical and skillful. And as a result, you win and you're better than your opponent. I've got a conspiracy theory for you, just to run by you quickly. Go I remember when the rumours were Chinese owners are incoming, you know, I wrote a few articles. Why are the Chinese interested in English football? So suddenly within a space of, was it summer or a year?
A year.
All the four main West Midlands clubs, Blues, Baggies, Wolves, Villa, are bought up by Chinese owners. And you're thinking, well, this is more than a coincidence. So my conspiracy theory is, and all of this is meant to be driven by the Prime Minister's in China's goal of China winning the World Cup in, you know, 2030 or, you know, whenever that year is. And so my conspiracy theory is, it's like, you know, you have reality shows to fill the, like, In Excess, when they lost their lead singer, they had a reality show in Australia to get a singer for the band. I think, did Queen do it as well? In America. And it's a bit like The Apprentice. So I think in China, there's a big TV show going on where four contestants, essentially working for the government, are enlisted to pick a team. They've got a choice of four teams, and they've all got to assume a friendly English-sounded name. So I think the choices were Tony, Jeff, Paul. I don't think the West Brom guy. I think he ditched his friendly English name.
Big Dave.
Something to use on Big Dave. Yeah. He passed it on to the manager instead. So they had a choice of Jeff, Tony, Dave, and Paul. So I don't know if it was like the Drew Lots or whatever. You know, maybe the first person drew West Brom because they were in the Premier League at the time. So there's a bit of an added advantage. Then probably Tony chose Villa because they had parachute payments and whatever. And then I don't know if they drew lots to choose the name. So I think, what would you have gone for? Well, Dave is my name, so I'd have probably gone for that. But I quite like Jeff. Jeff Shy sounds fantastic.
That's a very good name. Carson Young remains one of my favourite ones. Good strong name for a hairdresser.
People have problems, I mean, digressing a little bit, people have problems with like social appropriation of like people having to use English names just to fit in. But in this instance, it kind of works. Quite well. I mean, like, it's easier to be called Dr. Tony on your Twitter and let's say the Pied Piper of Villa Twitter, as I would call him, and sucker a load of people in.
I mean, plus I guess as well, if HMRC need to send you letters, they don't exactly know who to address it to. A loose thought I had.
I mean, it's just a conspiracy theory, but maybe all these West Midlands clubs, we're just involved in one big television reality stroke game show in China.
No, it's like Love Island.
Or it's just someone's massive tax write-off. A whole lot.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
That bill was paid, though.
Meanwhile, in China, everybody's sitting there laughing at their television sets at the downfall of Villa.
My favourite week was when they voted Keith Wynas out the house. That was a surprise, wasn't it?
And then very quickly, they got rid of Steve Square. I mean, Steve Round.
The gags write themselves, folks. Welcome to episode 50.
But they are refusing to vote out Steve Bruce. They're really digging their heels in there. It's a bit of a strange one.
He's stuck in the diary room chair, that's why.
We kind of drifted off the initial point, but it's kind of quite an interesting article. And he's talking about Wolves becoming the biggest in Asia, and they've got a head start at the moment, but they seem to have a real plan. And, you know, he was also talking about, this is Jeff, by the way, if an overseas company is successfully going to run something, you have to be there and live there so you know every nuance and everything that happens. I mean, I've always had this opinion that if you employ the right person on the ground to run, you know, run your ship, then it doesn't really matter. But this guy taught me around it, especially if you're from a different business culture.
I think you can read all the TripAdvisor books in the world and all the Harvard Business Reviews, but if you find yourself having read Lonely Planet for England and then find yourself in Wolverhampton, and if you find success, in my view, you've achieved. You know, that's why capital controls don't impact you, I think, in China. They just go, well done, well done.
Yeah, and he's also talking about building a stadium of 55,000-60,000, and that was obviously what Dr. Tony said to me. Oh, 60, why not 60? Why not 80? 100, higher than 100, 120.
Oh, God.
But Wolves, I think they said they will be deciding at the end of this season what they're going to do in terms of the bigger plan, in terms of stadium. And that's obviously all whether, I think, A, that if they impress themselves on the league, and B, aren't actually getting relegated. Mm. Moving on to point three was just a little ditty about, I think it was in newspapers this week, Norwich painting Carrow Road's away dressing rooms pink.
Red is dead, blue is through, green's obscene, brown's taboo. Pink, pink!
With the cunning plan to calm opposition players and lower their testosterone levels.
That's worked well.
It's not working. Have they won it all yet? I mean, nope. I didn't catch.
They've sold everyone, haven't they?
I wonder what colour they painted the home dressing room. But no, I mean, this is a tradition where, I mean, Villa's away dressing room's not too bad, but obviously it's not as, let's say, swish as the home dressing room.
What happened to people just focusing on winning football games instead of trying to apply some bizarre psychology to things? I don't, you know, it's the psychology is the way I think of it is, I don't know, you know, Vieira and Keane facing off in the tunnel. They won't have cared what colour the dressing room was painted, would they, ultimately, you know? Good players are good players.
It might work if you paint it pink when Villa come to town, because it might remind Villa players of that kind of pinky purple claret that Under Armour and Macron were trying to pass off as claret. But I mean, back in the day, I think, you know, an infamous one would be when you'd go and play Wimbledon, where they would turn all the hot water off, play loud music, basically to disorientate you,
and then kicked the living shit out of you on the pitch.
Exactly.
I mean, it wasn't so subtle.
Because there's so much money at stake in terms of the championship and getting promoted, I'm surprised that Villa aren't putting like LSD in the water in the away dressing room and all kinds
Villa's
of tricks.
Delivering Villa's catering into the away dressing room would be always a selection of, I think they're burgers. Some of them have meat in.
That's last season's pie.
Yeah. If Norwich get relegated, that will be a lesson not to paint your dressing room pink.
Now it's time for Twitter with Tony.
Dr. Tony, you've got to make some tweets for your Villa Minions. We've got to stay relevant. The Egyptian and American rich men don't have Twitter. We have the advantage.
July 20th. It's been very, very tough 2 months on the run. Nothing changed my love and commitment to AV, apart from the financial obligations. Even the Chinese economy policy made things of most difficulty. Hope new partnership with Nassif and Wes, real billionaires, bastards. We can continue our efforts, three's a crowd, says Wes, to bring Villa to where it belongs. Solvency. Hashtag Villa in my heart. July 20th. All your support has been the last driving force helping me to get through the most difficult time. Miss you, Keith. August 6th. Thanks for your kind wishes. All three of them. Have to say, we were even worse than Sunderland when we walked in. I don't recall for what. I've been trying, though. I know we could do much better in many ways. August 18th. Not a pleasant weekend. But his season card was declined and Big Keith won't let me watch his AVTV. August 22nd, the King Codger is back! Until Bristol ask us to pay up. August 23rd, thanks for your fair words, suckers. I contributed all I could, the fucking nout apart from emojis, and I have never felt regretful, except I did feel gutted, like Big Keith. As some fans misunderstood when they really didn't know the truth. Not that there was any. I couldn't do anything more except if I could score 2 goals in playoff final, aside from pay the bills. Hashtag OTV.
Since the last podcast, 2 games... 2 draws with very different narratives. The first one, it's been a bit of a trait in the Bruce tenureship, is breaking down. I think when we beat Ipswich last season, they went down to 10 men, did they not?
Mm. They did, yeah.
But, you know, that's not a great team. But when we've played a team that's, let's say, a little bit more organised, a la Middlesbrough, when we had to play them with 10 men for 87 minutes. Fulham, when if ever you needed a team to go down, if you're 1-0 down and you need somebody to go down to 10 men with 20 minutes to play in a playoff final, it was then. Mm. And we didn't even get to earn a corner in the whole game. And then against Ipswich, I thought Villa were doing well against 11 men. And then they seemed to, it just wasn't as impressive in the second half. I mean, it's the tradition, obviously, that 10 men focus a bit more and obviously play deeper and try to shut up shop. But, you know, in the end, that's enough time to break anybody down. Dan, what was your take on it?
I think it underlined how, I think if you'd had a proper summer of recruitment, you'd have, and that was, I think, inherently because of our financial situation and though it was kept very quiet, a transfer embargo. But Ipswich showed us that we hadn't moved on from some of those problems you just described that ultimately led to us not going up automatically last season, that we didn't seize upon those chances that when Newcastle went up, when Brighton went up, when you know, your Wolveses are going up. And actually, I have to say, because it wasn't particularly pretty, Cardiff last season, they were winning those types of games. And
yeah.
I think what I would say is its context is very important. We had such a dreadful start last season that the fact that I know it was against 10 men and the context is we would have liked to have gone and won the game. We didn't lose that fixture overall. But I think if we'd been in a place where, you know, you wind the clock forward and I'm sure you, Chris will be talking about Brentford in a minute, but we were crying out for injecting some pace, some width into that against a team that for the best part of the second half was down to 10 men. What that draws is obvious criticism of Bruce because it was a very samey response. If you're looking at it objectively, yeah. We didn't do anything that, it didn't surprise anyone what happened and the way the game petered out and you thought, well, that was a missed opportunity. I don't sit in either side of the Bruce camp and I'm still annoyingly on the fence with it because I don't think we need to get overreacting at this stage, but I would hate for the Ipswich game to be one where we look back upon, you know, you've already mentioned that you wouldn't want to see us slipping out of sixth spot this season.
Yeah,
those are the kind of games that when you start tallying up, and they can count against a manager. And Bruce was, you know, Brentford will be spoken about in a minute. But if we'd have lost the Brentford game, it would have changed the narrative of all the good play that we had during that Brentford game, and against the backdrop of a disappointing result of Ipswich would have been lost.
Yeah, do you have anything to add to that, Chris, in terms of not beating Ipswich? I mean, against 11 men at any away point, you know, in the Championship, you kind of shrug your shoulders and go, okay, you know, it's an away point, it's an away point, but obviously 50 minutes or so against 10 men. Does that show that we may be heading to the play? I mean, it's very early days, but are we the calibre of team that's a playoff team as opposed to automatic is what I'm getting at?
I mean, it's still too early to tell because, you know, in, you know, it's time we'll know where we stand with the transfer window and who's come in and, you know, who's likely to feature. And I think Bruce will have a better idea of what his team is. It looked, as with the previous games at the start of the season, that it's a team that doesn't quite know what the plan is yet. You know, there's some really good individual performances and there has been in, you know, all the games so far. But as far as like a cohesiveness and that ability to go through the gears, which, you know, when the opposition goes down to 10 men, you have to do, because you knew what was going to happen. They were going to put 10 men behind the ball and say, right, we're happy with the point. And you kind of, you know, you have to give Ipswich a certain amount of credit and say, well, you know, fair enough, you had a job to do and you did it quite well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did Bruce have a plan B? Well, he hasn't so far in his tenure at Villa, so I don't really see why he would have started at Ipswich.
But say what you mean, Chris. I mean,
yeah.
who is it that says, I heard this a couple of days ago, a good manager doesn't have a plan B. He improves his plan A.
That sounds like a Fergusonism.
Mm. I can't remember what the context was.
I mean, that's the thing, you know. I mean, it didn't need Villa to be much better to beat Ipswich. That's the frustrating thing.
Mm, I'd agree with that.
You know, the start of a Championship season is a little bit like the start of a Grand National where, you know, everybody goes off all bumping into each other. And we've had two potential issues where we could have, let's say, fallen back or, you know, been dismounted. And we got that winner against Wigan in the last seconds, and then we also got an equaliser against Brentford in the last seconds, which kept us in the running, kept us near the front, and showed that we have actually got a resilience, which is something, if it gets contagious, will be a very, very good attribute to have going forward.
Yeah, I mean, we discussed last time out, didn't we, that last season, I think we came from behind twice to win in the whole season.
Yeah, yeah.
We've done that twice already, and we've salvaged a game with literally the last kick of the game. Now, you know, people can blast Bruce tactically all they want, but as far as the team actually having a bit of metal to grind out a result, you can't fault him for that. You know, there were times last season when that game would have petered out at 1-0 and the ground would have emptied and the team would have, you know, he'd have brought on four strikers and started lumping it. So it was great that actually when El Mohammedi got in a position, he delivered a pretty good ball and we put the ball in the net. The same with the Wigan game. Obviously, Hourihane got into a good position, showed a bit of composure, didn't panic, put the ball on a plate. Bjarnason scored the winner. That's, you know, has to be taken as something of a positive. You know, we shall see over the course of the next months if, you know, the tide turns and we start getting late goals scored against us. But as things stand, we're actually showing a couple of traits that actually we didn't have last year.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about them petering out. I've been reading a lot of what Brentford fans have been saying, and they have, to sum them up, they've been saying they've actually played other teams off the park this season so far. So they were actually, you know, they were coming to, put on a show against us, but they were really frustrated about how Bruce actually did a job on them and I think kind of pressed up high and didn't allow them to play. And they said, you know, it kind of took its toll because after the 60, 70 minute mark, obviously we tired a bit and then they had a few chances. They could have and should have won the game. Nayland made some good saves. But still, even though they were tired, they managed to pull that last-ditch effort out of the bag and still never give up.
I think with the way Brentford set up, you're right, Bruce actually got it right by pushing their two fullbacks back and they did it really well in the second half. Every time they had a goal kick, we'd get right up on the corner of the penalty area because they want to play out from the back. Whereas, I'm not a fan of Jedinak at centre-back, but the one thing he did do was every time Brentford tried to go long, we won the ball. I think with Brentford, what might happen with them over the course of the year is that they have a really attractive plan A, but they're going to come up against teams who are going to kick them off the park because they've got McEachran in the middle of the park. He got subbed off. They've got a lot of very nice players, but they don't want to mix it. And similarly to really with like Wolves and Fulham last year, when you
unless they're stamping on our players, but
well, no
don't
comment.
Start me.
Don't start on that one.
Sorry, carry on.
I think similarly to Wolves and Fulham last year, you know, if you let them play their way, they'll rip you to pieces. Actually, if you get in and amongst them at the back, I thought Brentford were there for the taking. Once you get past their midfield and onto the back four, I think they are, they've got quite a soft underbelly. I don't think they're one of those teams that are going to battle out sort of scrappy wins. I think if they play well, they have to play well to win, I think is what I'm trying to say. They're not going to win ugly.
And I think a big part of their surprise when they played us was obviously John McGinn. And he's somebody that the Brentford fans actually praised. I heard somebody call him a terrier in midfield, but I wanted to call him a different dog's name.
I thought he was a very, very... he was everywhere, wasn't he, in the Brentford game? I actually thought it was funny because you read some of the pre-match stuff, and I know a lot of it's conjecture and whatnot, but it was almost as though Barcelona were coming to play at Villa Park. You know, the Dean Smith.
Completely. It was almost branded as football against anti-football,
It was bizarre. It was absolutely bizarre. Yeah. So I took my seat in the whole 10 thinking, well, this could be a fantastic spectacle. And the reality was that we were quite similar football teams, I thought, that we both had...
Because we stopped them playing.
Well, we did. And my reason for jumping in really is I think that it was my first opportunity to have a real close look at McGinn, where I thought that this is a team that's going to play through us. And they move the ball very quickly from back to front, as Chris just said. But I also thought, and I read a couple of forums before the Brentford game, is that their fans observed that they struggled to hold the middle part of the game. So they would look to steal that goal as they did. And they would look to see us tire, which they did. But I thought that, and this is where I think our two glaring weaknesses because of our lack of transfer activity and in part Bruce's stubbornness. So I see it as two factors here. One is like both defences had a weakness. Ours is that we're marrying up the centre halves poorly, and I think Brentford's is quite a soft back four, as was mentioned. And we haven't honed our attacking threat yet. You know, Kodjia was feeding off scraps really and scored two fantastic goals anyway. But I think that showed that if we'd have had those supporting characters, if you like, around that I think we'd have had too much for Brentford over 90 minutes, especially if we could have injected something at 70 minutes.
Yeah, because early on we were particularly wasteful. And I noticed, Adoma had a good, well, let's say early part of the season, last season, and a lot of it came from drifting in from the left-hand side and almost playing as that secondary centre forward. But I noticed last night he would beat the man. whether by pace or trickery. And then he would have that extra step, or he would adjust his body to get it onto his right foot. And by that kind of extra split second, the defender gets a challenge in or puts him off putting in a decent cross. You know, I noticed, well, if he actually just whipped it in first time, if he was naturally left-footed, he would have got that cross in, no problem. Mm. And there was an example later on in the game where he did just whip it in with his left foot and created a chance for Codro. I think it was a bit too central, so, you know, his instinct, he just hit it first time and it went straight at the keeper. But you're thinking, if we've got, it's all about margins, it's all about seconds. If you've got wingers who are naturally, you know, right-footed on the right wing, left-footed on the left wing, then they can get round the back, they can beat that fullback, get behind them. And if you're trying to break down, for example, against Ipswich, those two banks of, well, almost two banks of five or five and four, it's all about that split second to get that first-time cross in, and you normally only do that on your natural foot.
That was always the difference, and I always used to think, and why Odoma, though he faded towards the end of last season, he had a lot of success with it in the early part, is that Snodgrass was such a different player to have with that similar thing with on the opposite foot. But the difference on that, and this is why I think that Snodgrass always retained a lot of goodwill with the Villa fans, despite things not necessarily always coming off in terms of assists, was that his movement inside and the ball in would be dangerous regardless. I think Odoma has a habit, as you just said, of he'll get into the good space and then deliver such a poor ball that there's no danger. You know, with Snodgrass, you'd have that cut in, that shot that might bend in or get a flick or be an assist. And Adoma's is until he was taken off, I thought he looked like a player who unfortunately is fading. And the signings, I think, probably will move him to be a bit part player this season. With that said, he can still have an impact.
I was thinking about last season, in terms of them, you know, Snodgrass and Odoma fading, I was just thinking, well, potentially that the teams have obviously worked it out, that Villa play two wingers that cut in. And so obviously you take precautions against that and make sure they don't turn you that side.
Yeah, I think the other thing with both of those guys last season is Odoma is tricky but isn't lightning quick, and Snodgrass has never been a quick winger. He's not one of these head down, get to the ball and whip it in type players. That's the outlet that Green potentially gives you. No one really knows yet, and his end product is, you know,
discussed Green there, a few times, like last season on the show, and our conclusion was he was always a little bit one dimensional in terms of running the same channel. And
do you know what I thought I thought in the Brentford game as he came on, because he had what, 20 minutes or so, give or take.
He
reminded me very much of Grealish as he was first, you know, maybe a couple of seasons into his Villa career, where you weren't quite sure whether he knew how he could best hurt teams as well. Do you know what I mean? He's trying to play like as a byline winger, and it's quite clumsy actually, where I think he doesn't look like he's playing naturally all of the time for me, whereas you see now where Grealish has an athleticism and a confidence to ghost among players.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know whether that's how Green will develop, but for me, you've got to come on and be looking to have that impact, because you can see what Green's qualities might be. There was glimpses in pre-season. And I do see him.
Yeah, well, the thing is, he was playing centre forward in pre-season.
Exactly.
And, I mean, me and Chris went to the West Ham game, and as soon as he came on as a sub in that, and straight away he had an impact where it was almost a dress rehearsal for the goal he did score. And then obviously later, a few days later against Dresden, he scored twice. So if Codger was still playing with his head down and not playing with any confidence, it might have been worth playing Green down the middle, even, you know, if it's just for a few minutes as a sub, just to see if he can make more of an impact that way.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
But what about this new dynamic holding midfielder that we've got, the Irish international?
What about him?
Well, he gave one of those performances where there's a proportion of our fan base, and I'm happy to stick my head above the parapet, who just have always been desperate for Whelan to fail. And we have the benefit of hindsight and looking back and of being able to say individual games have been poor. I think he put in a fantastic performance against Brentford. Vocal, breaking up the play. There was some fantastic passing, but one or two interceptions where if he hadn't been stood where he was stood, you know, they're in on Chester and Jedinak. And I just thought it was really, really strong performance.
He had the highest pass completion rate, I think 93.3%.
That's exactly what his role is. You know, he isn't there to break forward. He's there, he just keeps it ticking over. Probably Brentford aren't as physical a team as others, so people weren't going to get after him in the same way. But he just keeps the game moving, and he lets sort of McGinn and Grealish get that 10, 15, 20 yards further up the field where they can start hurting teams. You know, because the previous couple of games, Grealish had been, we'd spoken before, I think it was the Wigan game, Grealish was coming back and taking the ball off the centre-backs.
Yeah, complete waste of time.
It's great to, you know, he's all very good and well in wanting to get involved, but you want him to start in the centre circle and get at teams.
There's a question, we're doing the listener questions at the end of this discussion and we'll release it separately, but there is one question that actually says, who do you play at holding midfielder? Which is very relevant here because we've essentially got three candidates here who all three of them have weaknesses, but all three of them have strengths. So it's like, who do you go for? Or do you just rotate?
At this level, it's an embarrassment of riches, isn't it? To basically have three international midfielders who can all play.
Yeah.
They're all interchangeable depending on who you play against.
They've all got fan camps and they've also all got hatred camps as well.
I mean, what I would say is this is an area where, I mean, I've jumped in with three or four criticisms of Bruce and I've been saying I'm sat on the fence and I'm going to throw another one here. This is where I think that where Bruce struggles with team selection. He got it right with Whelan, but you need to look at almost individual games and teams where you say, do you know what, Whelan was fantastic for the Brentford game, but I need Jedinak in that role for this game, or I put a Bjarnason in for this game. That's where I think...
Management.
Yeah, management.
It's planning a few games ahead, isn't it, as well?
Mm.
Yeah.
And it is exactly that. That Whelan perhaps is into that Terry sort of age now where he's not going to be playing three games in a week. But that's what perplexes me a bit by putting both Whelan and Jedinak in the team, that you lose that rotation bit and Bjarnason might not be the natural swap in for the next game.
And also you will fade later on in the game if you've got Whelan, Jedinak, Hutton. I mean, these guys are all approaching mid-30s.
Say like with Jedinak, we saw at the end of last season in big games the pros and the cons to having him in the team. I remember, I think it was the Blues game and the Cardiff game especially, he won everything in the air. If you play against anybody who's going to play an aerial game, he'll mop it up. He's fantastic at that, but you look at teams who target him for pace and positioning, and he's a sitting duck. And I think he can do a far more effective job as a defensive sort of midfielder because he can literally almost play as a third centre back almost. Whelan's that kind of keep the game ticking over, but isn't necessarily going to offer you the same aerial presence or physical presence in the same way. And Bjarnason is a little bit of everything. He's more of a general midfielder than a specifically defensive midfielder because I think he offers what the other two don't in that he can actually get a goal.
It's a funny one, isn't it? It's a position that almost in Villa's current situation as well, that if it's the wrong pick or it's the wrong man and you become very exposed and when you're circling where the goals are coming from, it often would be in and around that role, wouldn't it? And
you did rightly say that it's about picking the right ones at the right times. I mean, for example, last season when we beat Wolves, obviously with Jedinak, and it's a high intensity game, and then a couple of days later you're playing QPR, who were coming fired up, and he played Jedinak when really he should have played Bjarnason, in my opinion, just to cover more ground. And then fast forward a few days and you're playing Bolton in the snow, and that's a bit more of a bombardment because they're obviously playing to the elements. That's when you needed Jedinak. But instead, Jedinak had obviously played two games in quick succession. So he played Bjarnason, and now Bjarnason, that wasn't his... I mean, he should have been his game, being a bloody Icelandic. But But you would have been better served with the physical presence of Jedinek. So that was, in my book, that was a real selection cock-up last season. But just
it's a bit of man management, isn't it, as well?
Yeah.
I remember Ferguson always used to say with people like Nicky Butt, you know, he would always say, you know, you're not playing this week, you're not playing next the week after that, but I've got a game in 3 weeks' time in the Champions League and I want you to do this job, so be prepared.
Yeah.
And normally he'd play and he'd do that job really well. And I think there's a certain amount that Bruce could adopt that, you know, if he starts looking further ahead.
Maybe this is what Bruce is doing with Mika Richards and Ross McCormack. You're not playing this week. You're not playing next week. You're not playing the week after. You're not playing the week after that. In fact, you're not playing for the next 8 months. But there's a job I want you to do.
Yeah. In the summer, it's called packing your bags.
We need to collect these wages.
I can't even remember what the last game of the season is, but maybe that's when McCormack comes in and wins his promotion. Just one thing. I mean, again, against Brentford, and I think it's what you're alluding to, Chris, about Jedinek being like a sitting duck, is we have been very vulnerable to the counter. And I don't know if having a bit more pace with the wide midfielders will actually kind of help in that department, or if that's just a matter of playing defenders in their rightful positions.
Probably a bit of both, isn't it? I think we discussed before that even by adding one new winger, you can actually completely change the dynamic of your team. Because if you've got a good right winger, all of a sudden El Mohamedy can go back to right back, and you've actually got a really strong right hand side because both players can attack. Would have thought that Twanzabu would go into a centre-back position and all of a sudden your back four begins to look a little bit more balanced.
And Hudson at left, or...?
For the time being, I think. I mean, unless... The reality is, you know, he's either going to get suspended or he'll get an injury or something. Taylor will get opportunities. It's whether Taylor comes in and actually takes those opportunities, which, from what we've seen, his confidence isn't sky high. So I think Hutton's probably the solid option, especially if you're going to play a more attacking midfield three or a... You know, a proper winger on the left-hand side. I think Hutton then isn't under as much pressure to have to bomb on, and you end up having a much more solid back four, and the midfield and the attackers have to do the brunt of the legwork rather than having two wing backs getting up and down.
In terms of Jedinek, you're just talking about rotating the three of those DMs and taking into account whoever we're playing on a certain any given day.
Yeah, I mean Jedinek can be a centre back. You'd class him as an option, but he definitely isn't the option. For me.
So what about Tony Elphick?
The same applies. I think he'll get opportunities through the season, and it's whether he takes them or not. You know, I think Twanzabi played really well against Brentford. He deserves to retain his place in the team, be it at centre back or right back.
The goalkeeper, I mentioned it last podcast that both goalkeepers looked like car crashes waiting to happen, and straight after that podcast, Ipswich happened, and that was a howler of a mistake. And then may disagree, but he should have done a bit better with that. Should have had stronger wrists for that second goal.
Possibly a little bit of its luck, isn't it? He made two big saves.
Yeah, one problem he had before, he picked the ball out of the net more times than he had saves to make. So he only had like one save in a couple of games. So I think Ipswich had one shot on target, which was the goal.
Yeah.
So he had no foundations to build confidence. He was going for crosses, picking the ball out of the net, and that was about it. He didn't have any chance to show he was the man.
That was the story with Johnson, wasn't it, really? Even last season, for a lot of moments, you know, there'd be a lot of games where he'd have nothing to do, and then we'd make our customary boob up at the back and it'd end up in the back of the net. So it's kind of a bit of luck. I think, you know, the save he made at the end to prevent it from being 3-1 was a huge save. I think he'll take great confidence from that.
Yeah.
And I suppose there's the factor in that, well, he doesn't know what his back four is in front of him yet. So
absolutely. I think there's a couple of biggies for me that this is a big step up professionally.
Yeah.
I think that it's very early to judge him, and I think he's under the microscope because we've not been blessed with many good goalkeepers for a number of seasons now. Is that, you know, widely known fact among anyone who watches the Villa.
Yeah.
We've had a poor continental European goalkeeper in recent history. And there's two big things for goalkeepers for me, of any age, of any, you know, from anywhere really. I think they've got to have a strong defence in front of them. And I think that's how Johnston blossomed, because having someone like Chester and Terry anchored in front of you was no surprise ultimately that he managed to benefit from that. And the other big factor is that your defence then has to have confidence in the goalkeeper. And the two are vital, because they interlink, you know. A nervous defence, however good it can be, can't be worrying about who stood behind, because in those big moments, because chances will come for any team, that goalkeepers have to make big saves sometimes. The real plus for me that he made a couple of big contributions over the 90 minutes. I thought he looked shaky at times, no doubt about it. I can allow for that. I'd have been worried if, you know, if we'd have been walking away going, bloody hell, we've lost 3-4-1 at home to Brentford and the goalkeeper looks ropey as fuck. But I didn't walk away thinking that. I thought there's something to work with there.
The thing with goalkeepers, they're obviously going to, even if they're bad, they're going to make saves because that's, you know, that's their job. Mm. I mean, especially when you're professional level, you're not going to buy a goalkeeper and they miss everything that comes their way. So they're going to make some saves. And this was the thing about Enkelman, for to mention that E word.
Why would you do that?
He would have some good games and you know, makes decent saves, but you were never confident because at any moment, and to a certain extent, David James was the epitome of that.
Calamity James,
and Sorensen.
And for the Villa, I mean, he got his name Calamity at Liverpool, but for the Villa, he was solid all that season. And we were all sitting there thinking, "Oh, masterstroke this! You know, we've got James, and he's actually he's matured
then the
now."
FA Cup final.
And then the FA Cup final comes along, and in that moment of need, when you need to bank on somebody, he fucked it up. And, you know, would have gone to penalties in that game 0-0, would have won it if it wasn't for that. I've seen the future. Or seen the past with the future. I don't know, one of those two.
Back to the future.
Back to the future, yes. I went back to the future and that's actually what happened. So there you go.
Peter Witt hit the post in my version.
And Bayern Munich beat us on penalties. So Nylund, it's almost like we don't look at the league table until 10 games. Let's see what happens to the keeper in 10 games. I mean, Johnson, everybody says, oh, Johnson was terrible, but he was pretty good in his first game against Spurs. He was pretty solid. You thought, you know, there's a keeper there. He's young. Obviously, he's not going to be the finished article. But with him, if he made a mistake, you thought, well, you know, he's young and this is his first main job. But you saw the potential with these guys, the other goalkeeper. I couldn't believe that he was a professional goalkeeper. Just his how he was hesitating and wimping out of every ball.
Awful, didn't he, at Yeovil?
And people are saying, oh, kept a clean sheet and saved a penalty. I mean, these are pricks that actually watch games and don't, you know little about football beyond social media, Football Manager and the highlights, if you know what I mean. That goalkeeper, I've never seen anybody look so shaky. And as I said last episode, if that's him on a bad day and he keeps a clean sheet, then we're not going to
win the league.
We're not going to concede anything. The man is blessed because that was it was scary. When the ball was in our half, it was scary straight away. All they had to do was take a shot from the halfway line. I mean, Yeovil should have really turned us over there. Just shoot. If you get in their half, shoot. Should have been the manager's instructions at half time.
Is it wrong that I was on holiday for that game? I'm actually really looking forward to seeing
him. Oh, you haven't
seen
him.
The way you built that up, I'm so excited now to see the comedy.
He's bound to play against Burton, so get ready for that game.
I can't wait.
But no, I've never seen anybody so, like, you'd go for it and you go, yeah, go on then, son. And then suddenly you would just, like, freeze for a second. And, no, keep going. And you'd just get a limp, you'd flap it away when that was there to either be caught with both hands or just punched for 50 yards.
I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to it.
Watch him. Hopefully we carry on in that cup because I think he keeps playing. So obviously he needs games, so he keeps playing. We need to get an away draw against the Premier League team and then we'll probably get video-aided referee as well. They're starting to trial it in the League Cup. 4 games in the next round.
Why couldn't they have trialed it in the playoff final?
This gets us onto the subject of stamping, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, well, there's not really a conversation. It was a stamp. He got a 3-match ban and that's it. Somebody did raise an interesting point where they said he should have got a 2-match ban and then banned from the return game Villa-Brentford. I thought that's quite a good idea. You Renaissance man, you.
Yeah.
They won't need him anyway at that point. We always implode at Brentford anyway, so he can enjoy a nice afternoon off.
I listened to 5 minutes of a Brentford podcast and somebody said, you know, blah, 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 blah. He goes, well, you know, at the end of the day, 3 times we've been to Villa Park last 3 seasons, haven't lost yet. And he's thinking, yeah.
All right, Barcelona.
Yeah, we've got fucking McGinniester now. It doesn't matter, does it? You fuckers. Clog dancing southern fuckers.
And it started again for the season.
Pub team.
First it was Fulham, now it's Brentford.
Come on, they
whoever that goddamn Villa fan was who called them a pub team on Twitter 2-3 years ago.
They've never let that go.
Essentially hexing us from ever beating them again. You know, when you say something on social media and say, "Oh, don't tempt they fate."
Don't buy Scott Hogan.
Yeah, not only
send
did
us your Chinese millions. All 12 of them plus 3 million bonus.
Not only did the Hex make them unbeatable against a team playing in Claret and Blue, but yeah, also all our Chinese millions were sucked away from us. Terrible.
I don't think they strictly were Chinese millions, were they? They were Villa's millions. Tony didn't have the money, did he?
No, we haven't touched the parachute money, Your Honour. Fucking liar.
Which, you may remember, I think it was episode 46, where we started the podcast with the actual first interview of Dr. Tony, in-house interview, and I put comedy sound effects on some of the crazy answers he was giving. Oh, yes, we will definitely be promoted to the Premier League. Oh, yes, we will win Champions League again and again and again, and we will be the biggest team in the world. Yesterday, Keith Wynas liked that Twitter post.
We have officially provided
evidence,
corporate evidence,
for the ensuing compensation case.
I'd love if he just wandered in, you know, like with a 1970s cassette player and just pressed play. The defence rests, Your Honour.
Well, we'll be there. I mean, we'll take a microphone in there because it'll be a great podcast episode.
I'm going to wear a double-breasted suit just for fancy dress.
Anyway, so to be continued on that front, let's see how that transpires. But, I mean, Tony's making out he's the most virtuous man in the world. And then Keith Wynas is basically saying he's been shafted.
Ooh, it's not a nice mental image, isn't it?
In any breakup, both sides blame each other. I mean, it's, you know, it's par the course.
I think it was the moment when Dr. Tony realised an Egyptian and an American flag had been ordered to hang off the... hang off the stand, that he knew something was awry. Allegedly.
Let's see how that one plays out. In terms of the loans coming in, Yannick Bolasie is incoming, slightly delayed, but by the time you listen to this, you'd have probably seen him announced.
Yannick had told me there was, you know, two or three clubs interested. He wanted to come up and have a look around, and, you know, then he was going to go off to other clubs and look at their clubs. So there was no problems. He was very straight and honest with it. Well, I think he's going to Villa.
The other guy coming in, Anwar El Ghazi. I have a friend who's one of the top honchos of one of the Ajax supporter clubs, who goes everywhere following him around Europe. And he said he's kind of a strong winger, because I think he's like 6'2", isn't he? So he's a bit of a kind of a powerhouse, and he can shrug players off. And he said he's quite a good winger, so I don't know what that means, but he said it's a good signing.
I mean, if he's played for Ajax, you would have thought he's going to be technically a good player. You know, he's going to have a first touch, unlike a lot of our lads, and the videos look good of him.
Yeah, he scored in the Nou Camp, and he's played Champions League, and...
I always rank wingers in terms of, are they an Alexander Tonev or a Didier Gaff? I think anything above, frankly, in my experience of modern Aston Villa, is that, you know, I've seen Ulysses De La Cruz. I know the wrong end.
You've got a point, actually. He's never going to be the worst winger Villa have had. So he can confidently walk into Bodymore Heath, swinging his little toiletries bag, knowing he's not going to be ridiculed straight away.
What was I was trying to think the other year, was it Dawkins we had on loan from Tottenham?
Yeah.
Awful.
There's another one for you. I mean, he can come and he can play really badly and probably be a legend.
But Bolasie, what's your views on him, if you have any? Because I can't really remember. I mean, Crystal Palace have had so many like sharp, nifty wingers. This is obviously Crystal Palace. I'm talking about the team that he really excelled in, that got him the big 25 million move to Everton. And I've got to be honest, I haven't really seen him do anything at Everton.
I don't think they have either, have they? He's been injured most of the time. Yeah. I think the move is probably good for both sides on the face of it. I think he needs game time, which you would have thought he'll be coming to Villa to play. He certainly won't be coming to be a squad player. Now, there'll be big question marks about his fitness, and will he have lost a yard of pace? And obviously, you know, is he going to be match fit or have any form? But I think if you get close to where he was in, you know, his heyday at Palace, I think at this level, he'll be destructive. It's just whether you can get the games out of him.
Yeah, because what we need is a bit of spark and maybe, should I say, unpredictability, because Elmo's kind of a steady Eddie, isn't he? You know exactly what he's going to do.
Well, you know he's got his one ball down the line.
Ball comes to him, he puts the sole of his foot on it, rolls it forward a little bit, and then he delivers the same ball. And still to this day, when I saw him against Watford in that pre-season friendly, his first game where he was really driving at the fullback, I thought, here we go, this is what we've needed. And then that was the last he ever did that. He would get to the edge of the 18 and then just put his foot on the ball and then just cross it in.
I mean, to be fair, I think he's actually had a really good start to the season this year.
Yeah.
He's looked good and he seems to have relished his sort of advanced role. I don't think it will last much longer, but I think if he can build a partnership with someone similarly to how he had with Snodgrass last year, I actually think he's a really useful right back to have.
Yeah,
you know, because he can deliver and he's got a good delivery on him. It's, you know, slightly inconsistent, but he's one of these guys who, if you put him in a good position, he'll more often than not deliver a good ball. And with Codger appearing to be firing again, you've actually got somebody who might get on the end of it.
So just finally, in this part of the podcast, what do we need from the loan market? Is there anything else? If you could have one or, let's say, two players, what would you aim for, Chris?
I would have thought probably, it's probably going to be a striker, isn't it? You'd think if we could go and get Tammy Abraham or whoever.
Yeah.
I think you can probably make do with what you've got as a left in the left-back position and maybe go and buy somebody in January if you have to. I'd say a striker.
Dan, what do you think in terms of one more?
Yeah, I think either an out-and-out striker or a player who you would say maybe sits in a diamond of attacking midfielders. Purely because, I mean, I'll be honest, I think that we McCormack doesn't look like he's ever going to be rehabilitated into a Villa shirt under Bruce. Hogan is made of glass and just doesn't seem to be working for him for whatever reason at Villa Park. Are we going to be risking another season down there, hoping that one of the younger lads comes off? I can't see that. And the one disadvantage that I think we've got is that we're very late to the game, albeit with a loan, transfer-wise. So, you know, Tammy Abrahams is the one that's banded around that could come off, but I wouldn't be surprised to see us looking, you know, further afield, really. Or maybe into, you know, we've just been talking about the Balassis of this world. What players, might you take a risk on? Because I think that for all of the exciting bits that a Balassi offers, I think that he comes with big risk, form, fitness. What's his appetite to do anything, really? There's a risk there. But, equally, there's a young striker at Southampton, I think, who's been mooted as an option, whose name escapes me at the moment. But there's risk, you
Not
know,
Shane
like
Long.
Took, no, the young, young Irish striker. But, you know, we saw the issues with, you know, we were hunting around for Sam Gallagher last season. He goes to Blues, doesn't really impress greatly.
Yeah,
but was seen as an option, and
yeah, there is this notion of just get somebody in, get anybody in. You know, it's just because any signing excites fans. But then when you actually do the accounts and look at people that have actually contributed to the cause, the percentage isn't that high, really, is it? Most of them turn out to be muppets.
I mean, again, there's a barometer of success here. It could be Grant Holt, Marlon Harewood.
Oh, we've had some shockers.
Bosco Balaban,
you know.
He
took Gilles de Bilder on loan, I seem to recall.
I went to Croatia, must have been to Croatia five or six times. Five of those were within a space of a couple of years. And if I was at like a party or something, there would always be at least one conversation where somebody in Zagreb would thank me for the money they got for Bosco Balaban. They would, you know, there'd be Dynamo Zagreb supporters. But I was always
we're Dynamo outing on it every night.
I was always welcomed in the city of Zagreb for some reason, and after thinking about it, I realised why. Because I support the team that essentially built the city of Zagreb with the money they gave them for Bosco Balaban. Anyway, we digress. Right, we're going to crack on and answer the listener questions, which you'll be able to listen to next time. In the meantime, please do, if you have not become a patron of the show, please do join. And also, since the last show, Chris Lonnan has joined, and Adam, and I don't know how to pronounce this, but I'm going for Shazretta. Big shout out and thanks to them for joining. You can join the My Old Man Said patrons by going to myoldmansaid.com and clicking on the patron sign. And when you see the podcast on social media, Twitter or wherever, please do give it a retweet or share it just to help get the word out. Because if you've got friends, then obviously they have got good taste if they're your friends, because you've got good taste because you listen to the show. So let's spread the word, people. Right, I normally say until next time, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from him, and it's goodbye from him. So I don't know how to do this. Them, and I'll do that.
Just goodbye from us.
No, you've got to keep the Ronnies going.
Or if you're from Wolverhampton, it's goodbye from Wim.
Anyway, until next time, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
See you later.
My old man said,
away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.